From the KTOO Newsroom, I'm Pablo Peña with a local and statewide news update. One of Southeast Alaska's largest tribes is reminding citizens that it could see a loss in funding if they don't report in the 2020 census. Tlingit and Haida President Richard Peterson says right now a little over 40% of tribal citizens have reported in the census. He also says there was an undercount in the 2010 census, which impacted housing in a very real way.
Whether it's health or social services, public protection, public safety, education, it all falls back to the census. So, you know, if you think it doesn't affect you, you're wrong.
Peterson says much of the federal funding the tribe receives is dependent on the census. If only 50% of citizens report, the tribe's funding gets cut by a proportional amount. Peterson encourages all tribal citizens to go to the census website and answer questions. It takes about 5 minutes. Alaska Native organizations in Southeast are proposing alternatives to the University of Alaska's Board of Regents' controversial option to merge the University of Alaska Southeast with one of the other UAA campuses. Native leaders from SeaLaska, SeaLaska Heritage Institute, and the Central Council of Tlingit and Haida sent a letter to select regents this week. They're asking for the option to establish UAS as the administrative hub for rural community campuses. They say a more centralized campus in the region can increase overall enrollment. It could also expand options for students and streamline program and course offerings. The Board of Regents are meeting to discuss options on Thursday and Friday. They're also holding a public testimony by phone today at 6 p.m. until 6 p.m. at 1-866-726-0757. Alaska has lifted restrictions on businesses, and some people are getting out more after the pandemic radically altered social life in March and April. But for nursing homes, there's no set date for when families can safely reunite. The state has set up a task force to look into how to reintegrate visits. However, there's still a lot of unknowns about when that's going to happen. KTOO's Elizabeth Jenkins has the story of how residents and their families are coping with the distance.
Joni Mitchell's brother, Donnie, lives at Wildflower Court, a nursing home in Juneau. She sees him at least once a week or more through a screen.
Hello? Oh, there we go. It's Jody.
Oh, Jody.
Hi, Donnie.
And usually, it's a big family gathering.
Yeah.
On the Zoom conference, there's family from Hawaii and California. Mitchell is calling in from Juneau. There's talk of the weather, the pandemic, and what Donnie's been up to.
So, Donnie, you've been winning at bingo?
No.
What do you get when you win? They should increase it to a new car. You could give it to Kayla.
It's been over 3 months since Mitchell has seen her brother in person. Wildflower Court closed its door to visitors in early March, around the time COVID-19 outbreak struck nursing homes in Washington state. Normally, Mitchell brings her brother home on the weekends. He likes helping her pick weeds in the garden, going on shopping trips. It's precious time they have together.
Well, as soon as they allow you out, believe me, I'm going to come and get you.
Oh, gosh, I can't wait.
At 57 years old, Mitchell's brother is one of the younger residents at Wildflower Court. He lives there because of short-term memory loss. Mitchell says the pandemic has been disruptive to his routine. He has his ups and downs. Wildflower Court has the option to visit through a window, but Mitchell's not sure that would be a good fit for her brother.
If I had gone there and he saw me, he wouldn't be able to understand why he can't just come with me.
Last week, there were only 9 cases of COVID-19 reported in nursing homes in Alaska, and all of those cases had recovered. But that number jumped up over the weekend after a cluster of tests came back positive in Anchorage. It's unknown when nursing homes can safely allow families back in. So facilities are having to come up with solutions to help close the emotional gap. That can look like video chats, like the one Mitchell has with her brother, window visits, or holding hands through an arm-shaped hole.
We have these long gloves that literally they're disposable and they cover your hand and they go all the way up to your arms.
That's Ruth Johnson. She oversees operations at Wildflower Court. She says, of course, keeping residents safe during the pandemic has been a major concern. So has the psychological toll of people not being able to see their families in their typical way. It's something that hits home for Johnson. Her father had to go into a nursing facility in Washington state in the spring, where later dozens of people contracted the virus.
And I feel like my father may not die of COVID, but he may be part of the collateral damage, the isolation and loneliness and my inability. He has not seen anybody who loves him in 3 months.
Johnson says this is why she cares so much. She knows how Juno families are feeling. Not all nursing homes are equipped for video calls, but Wildflower Court was able to get video chats up and running in a matter of weeks. People donated electronic devices, and staff set up a way for families to schedule time to talk. Johnson wondered if communicating like this would be confusing for residents who can't have difficulty recognizing faces or adjusting to sudden change. But overall, people seem to be adapting. Like the other day, she saw a resident with an iPad.
You know, she's just of that age where she would not have used the technology. And she was sitting there with a pair of earphones on, plugged into the device. So it was a private conversation with just the most beautiful smile on her face, talking to a family member.
Jackie Peta says that's been her experience too. On video calls to Wildflower Court, her mom looks happy and calm. At first, she was reluctant to try video chatting. She worried her mom wouldn't understand why she couldn't be there in person. It would be upsetting. But as social distancing measures continued, she decided to give it a try. There were some technical issues when they first tried to connect.
And at that moment, my emotions got so real because I felt like I'm so close to talking to my mom and now I'm not going to be able to. And that fear, that you get was like overwhelming. That I realized at that moment how much I missed her and how much I needed to talk to her.
But they were able to work it out, and she saw her mom for the first time in weeks. Peta thinks her mother could sense that she was nervous and a little flustered. So her mom did what good mothers do. She says her mom told her exactly what she needed to hear in that moment.
I love you. I think about you guys all the time. I miss you every day. It's like it hurts inside how much I miss you. And then she'd say, but it's all going to be okay. We're going to be together again.
Peta says communicating like this has revealed a blessing in disguise. Her mom has been able to see grandkids from across the country on video calls. That's not something that regularly happened before, but it's something she hopes continues after nursing homes are able to welcome families back inside again. In Juneau, I'm Elizabeth Jenkins.
Global protests continue as communities rally against the police killing of George Floyd and countless other Black Americans before him. In Anchorage, Fairbanks, and Juneau this weekend, hundreds of Alaskans turned out in solidarity with the Black Lives Matter movement, peacefully protesting against institutional racism and injustice. Kodiak joined in on Sunday with a small gathering of 5 community members. KMXT's Kavitha George has the story.
When Kari Milstein woke up on Sunday, she says she just had to do something. She'd been following the protests in Minneapolis and decided that despite being on a remote island thousands of miles away, she needed to speak out against the, quote, unchecked violence against Black people in America. She says in Kodiak, it can be easy for people to look the other way.
And I think it's easy for people to stay home and no matter what they believe, just kind of keep it to themselves and not really make it known because they feel like this community is so isolated from the rest of the country that Milstein it doesn't really matter.
Milstein gathered a small group of friends and headed out to the main intersection in downtown Kodiak Sunday afternoon, holding a sign that said, "End our silence, stop the violence." The response was mostly positive. Drivers honked and waved in support. But a handful of passerby shook their heads in disagreement, and a few gave the middle finger. Ron Jackson, a tattoo artist in Kodiak, says that it can be difficult to see the impacts of systemic police violence in a town where officers generally have a good relationship with the community.
Yeah, it's the constant interaction. So I tattoo the police officers here. I've tattooed the police chief. I've tattooed the last police chief. You're going to see them in Safeway, you know, no matter what job you have, you're going to encounter them on a personal level. And that's something that we benefit from here, but does also kind of hinder our worldview.
Kodiak has had experience with police brutality in the past. In 2018, the city of Kodiak settled a lawsuit with the family of an autistic man after police forcibly detained and pepper sprayed the man at close range. Jackson says he would like to see police held more accountable in incidents like these. Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin was filmed pressing his knee into George Floyd's neck on May 25th until the unarmed, handcuffed man suffocated. It took 4 days for Chauvin to be charged with murder and arrested.
If either of us had done what just happened, we would have been taken into custody immediately, not 4 days later. He did not get taken into custody right away, which is insane.
Tyler Barnes is an elementary school teacher in Kodiak. He says being so far removed from the lower 48 can make it difficult for the community to engage in issues of institutional racism.
And I think that a lot of the issues that we're facing now are not issues that we see here. So maybe Kodiak doesn't know how to respond to those types of movements. Kodiak can respond to climate change because it directly affects us. Kodiak can respond to Pebble Mine because it directly affects us. And so I think that what doesn't affect us, we're not quite so sure how to respond to.
Barnes, who is Hispanic, says he feels it's important to show support for other people of color, and specifically Black people, who are significantly more likely to be killed by police than any other racial group in America.
The entire United States needs to be here to support each other because we're still forgotten of most of the time, but we are still part of the United States, so we gotta back up our brothers and sisters who are suffering down below.
Anchorage, Fairbanks, and Juneau all held peaceful rallies this weekend, featuring community activist speakers, a moment of silence, and chants urging white protesters and allies of the Black Lives Matter movement to step up to prevent violence against Black people. Reporting in Kodiak, I'm Kavitha George.